Perek Shmini, which, well, this is Perek Tashi, it's the ninth Perek, which is the last Perek in Gemara Sota, begins with the problem of Egla Rufa. In other words, the heifer that has to be slain, of course, the Rufa means that they have to break the neck of it, actually. It's not the usual kind of Shechita, you know. Shechita normally is, of course, you know, that you cut the throat. But this is a rufa, and a rufa means that you have to break the neck of it, okay? So, this is not for reading purposes, the Egla rufa, okay? For the animal, I guess it's done swiftly. I know that there were certain bird sacrifices, for example, that the Kohen had to do also. That the Numul Orpo, he did it, you know, from the back of the neck or so. So a Kohen had to let a finger grow so that, I mean a fingernail grow, so that, you know, he could kill it by pushing his, and then I guess cutting, you know, one of the vital organs from the back over there. No, Mela. if we rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, let's hope that there won't be any murders taking place, or that we wouldn't have. This will only be a matter of theory. Okay. But at any rate, it says, Egla Rufa B'Lashon HaKodesh. You have to make whatever statements are made. Of course, what is the major statement? That they have to say, Yodeinu Lo Shofkos Hadam Hazeh V'Yeninu Ro, right? That our hands are not shed this blood, nor the Rabbi see, and then we pray into the Rebbeinu Shel and say, Kapeli Amcho Yisrael Asher Podis Ad Hashem, right? Forgive, O God, your people Israel, whom you have redeemed. Yaltitain Dom Naki Bekerev Amcho, right? And let there not be any innocent blood shed in the midst of thy people. So that this has to be said then in what? In Lashon Kodesh, okay? Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Va'at ki yimotzei cholol ba'adoma," that if a victim, that is somebody who is slain, is found in the land, on the ground, "Yotzei zekein echav shavtecho," and then the pasuk continues and says that in that case, "Your zekeinim and your shoftim," in other words, your elders and your judges go out, and of course they have to engage in the business of measuring to find out which city is closest to where the slain person is to be found. So the question is, who are the three who go out? Or who is the Benzim? Because we'll see the difference of opinion as to how many go out, okay? So the answer is, Mibezdin HaGodol Shebi Yerushalayim, or Yotzi. In other words, these were members of the Sanhedrin Gedola. Now remember again, there was a Sanhedrin Gedola, which met in Yerushalayim. It was in the Lishkas HaKosis, in other words, the chamber of hewn stone that was one of the chambers on the Beis HaMikdash. This was the place where they sat in judgment. And that's to be distinguished, and of course it had 71 people as members of it, okay? It was to be distinguished from the Sanhedrin Ketano, which is a court of 23 judges. And this court of 23 judges was to be established in every single city, you know, wherever there was a sizable population, so that they could support a Bezdin, you know, a Sanhedrin Ketana, okay? So these had to come from what we would call, let's say, the Supreme Court, that they had to come, these particular justices, and they were members of the Sanhedrin Gedola in Yerushalayim, Bezdin HaGodol. So, now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now, he disagrees because the Mishnah says, how many? Shlosha, right? Three. So, Rabbi Yehuda says, Chamisha. He says that there should be five. Now, what does he base it on? The answer is, he based it on the wording of the Pasuk. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Zekeinecho, right? So, take a look at Zekeinecho. Zekeinecho is spelt with the Yod, right, which indicates that it's plural. In other words, it means your zakenim. So what is the minimum of a plural? Naturally, the answer is two. So that's shnayim. Bishoftecha, and again, the same thing applies, so that's shnayim, right? And then we have a principle that concerning a bezdin, the ein bezdin shokel. And we cannot have a Bezdin which has only an even number of judges, because if that's the case, then in that case they can never arrive at a decision. You must have a majority. Pasuk, if you remember, says Acharei Rabim Lahatos, which is interpreted as meaning, you know, that you have to make a decision with a majority vote. Okay, you have to go according to the majority. So you can't have a majority if you have an even number. You have to have an odd number. Yeah, I understand. But in that case, for example, the question is, it's raised on the Gemara and Gemara and the Sanhedrin, you know. Yeah, absolutely right. Correct. Right. But, I mean, what would happen, for example, if you had, let's say, a Beis Din, we said 23 for the Sanhedrin Katana, right? And, I mean, what would happen if, for example, you had 11 versus 11, and one judge says, I don't know what to do, right? So in that case, they have to add in order to try to reach a decision. So naturally, who did they add from? The answer is that when the Sanhedrin met, they had not only the judges who were there, but they also had Talmidim who sat in rows in front of them. And from the Talmidim, you know, they would go. The one with the greatest experience and learning would be given seat number one, and then the next one next to him would be seat number two, and so on. And if they had to, if they needed additional people, so then they would call upon these people in rotation to see to serve. So this is what we find in Gemara and Sanhedrin. So some of this discussion that we have here tonight also is repeated in Sanhedrin. Okay. So getting back to the Mishnah over here. All right. So now the Mishnah continues with another possibility. It says Nimso Tomin Bagal or Tolui Ba Ilon Otsof Alpanei Hamayim Lohoya Ofri. If the slain person was found, for example, hidden underneath a pile of stones, so that he wasn't visible, okay? Or, I mean, eventually, of course, it would be discovered. I mean, that's obvious. But he was covered by a pile of stones on top. Or another possibility, Tolui Ba'ilan. He was a person, he was found hanging from a tree. Okay? And of course, the supposition is not, you know, that he committed suicide this way, but that he was slain this way. Somebody strangled him, you know, and hung him on a tree. Okay? Or Tzof Al Panei Hamayim. Or let's say he was floating on the water. You know, he had drowned and, you know, his body surfaced and was floating on the water. And then in that particular case, Lo Hoyo Ofrim. In that case, they did not have this business of the Egla Rufa at all. Shenemar, and they arrive at the following way. It says, Pasuk says, Ba'adomo. It says, on the ground. Okay? So therefore, if it says on the ground, that number one, v'lo tobin begal, it excludes where it is hidden underneath a heap of stones. Okay, the pasuk says no fail. So no fail excludes what? V'lo tolui. In other words, if it's falling, then it cannot be somebody who is hanging. Lotolui bo ilon, right? Not hanging on a tree. And then the pasuk says basodeh, right? In the field. So therefore, in the field, it says that excludes v'leitzof al panei hamayim, right? So that therefore, these three cases, if they find, you know, people who are slain, then the whole ritual of the egla rufa does not take place. Okay. They're being very, very literal. Very literal. The pasuk says, right, that, you know, he was, right, ki motzei cholol ba'domoshem no fail ba'sodeh. This is what it says. Ba'sodeh, right, no fail ba'sodeh. No, that they get from the other words. They get from the other words. I understand what you're saying. I mean, ba'domoshem should exclude the others. Well, but maybe you would say, you know, that Ba'adamah not only okay, badama certainly could not apply to somebody who was on the water, because badama means on the ground. Okay, so there we will have to have a separate word. Okay.
Why?
Why?
Why do you need a separate word? But if it's on the water, it's clearly not badama.
That is correct.
So then, why do you need badama?
All right, but what are you going to do about the person hanging on the tree? You might still say that since the tree grows from the ground, right, since the tree grows from the ground, you might say that the word Badama should include. And we want to exclude. We're not looking for more cases, obviously. We would like to avoid having as many cases as possible of this, because I don't have to tell you, it's a tircha for the Besdin, number one. You know, to leave Yerushalayim, come out to God knows where, in order to do the measuring and then to go through this whole ritual of saying, you know, that don't hold us responsible, we didn't see it, we didn't do it, and so on and so forth, and please forgive us, and so on and so forth, you understand? So therefore, they are trying to cut down on the number of cases by taking each word and saying, this word implies this, and this word implies that, and this one. So Ba'adama means not underneath a gal, right? And basodeh, and so on and so forth, right? No failure, yeah.
He's still on the ground, he's buried under
a heap of stones, right?
He's still on the ground.
I would say so, yes, but nevertheless, again, since they are looking to exclude, so we have to say that this is what they're trying to do. They really want to try to exclude it. You're right. I mean, from the point of view of logic, we might quibble with it, okay? We might argue that it's not so. But nevertheless, as we see, they like to take a word and apply it specifically to one case and say that it excludes a different case. Of course, at other times, I mean, it may be that the word, let's say if you have, for example, what we call a gezeirah shavah, where, you know, you have two different situations with the same word to be found, and then in that case we try to say that what is true in case A is also true in case B, because they have the same expression with them. So that being the case, you know, it all depends on the situation. You have to always work on the individual case and not simply draw. By the way, for Gezeiras Shavah, you can't simply go and pick any two words and say, aha, I got myself a Gezeiras Shavah. A Gezeiras Shavah works only if you have a Masoret, you know, you have a tradition that goes back to, you know, a great authority who was able to find a relevant Gezeiras Shavah. Only in that case. But simply to take any two words and say, aha, I have a gezeirah shavah, that doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but if I was trying to find an example,
yeah,
where you needed the word no
fail, right,
and say, suppose they find him, somebody put up a stick,
yeah,
and they tied his body to the stick,
yeah,
Ba'adama is still on the ground,
yeah,
he's got his feet on the ground, but he's propped up, he's not.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying,
that
right.
Be, and,
yeah.
And in that situation, they wouldn't have to do the
Egel HaRufa, right, correct.
He's
right.
Not falling down.
He's right.
Up.
Okay.
So that's the kind of example I would use.
Yeah.
Where the word Adama is extremely appropriate,
yeah,
to eliminate the necessity to do the.
All right, as I say, I mean, we could find some holes in the logic over here. But nevertheless, we also have to understand why are they doing it. They're doing it because really they're trying to cut down on the number of cases where it would involve the Egel HaRufa. Now we have a couple of other cases too where they're going to exclude the business of going through the process of Egel HaRufa. The Mishnah now continues and says, okay, Nimso Samach L'Sfar. Let's say that the body is found near the Sfar. Sfar means a border area where, of course, the enemies of the Jewish people are very close by. So again, they don't want to get involved in that area because of the fact that they may create a dangerous situation. So therefore, they're not doing it. That's one thing. Or le'ir sherubo de kachavim, right? Let's say if the body is found near a city where the majority of the inhabitants are not Jews, but they are Goyim. Okay? Ole Yishem Bo Besdin, or a city which is a Jewish city, but it has no Besdin in it. Then in that case, again, Lo Hoyu Orphan. Then this whole business of the Egla Rufa was not carried out. And then finally it says, Ein Modedin Ela Le'Yisha Yesh Bo Besdin. Obviously it means then that if they don't have a Besdin, then you can't do it. So we cannot, therefore, do any measuring except to a city in which there is a Besdin. Of course, the basic reason why, because it says, Zekeinecha and Shoftecha, so that we have to have Shoftim, and Shoftim obviously are connected with a Besdin. If there is no Besdin, then you don't have people, you know, who are capable of doing this. Okay. So now the Gemara wants to know. It says, Michael Omar. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Then one of the other cities is going to have to take the responsibility because they do have a Besdin?
That's quite possible. Yeah, that is possible. It's a very good question that you asked. Right. Right. That's correct. Right. Yeah. This is something that they're going to discuss much further. You know, if the one city has a Besdin and the other one doesn't, then where should you do the measuring, you see? So that even though geographically it might be closer to the place which has no Besdin, but because we want to have a city which has a Besdin, and even though it's further away, then that's where they're going to do the measuring. Yeah. So now the Gemara asks the following question. It's Michael Omar. What is the Mishnah trying to tell us over here? In reference to what? Of course the answer is the very first part of the Mishnah. What did it deal with? Dealt with the fact that it has to be Lashon HaKodesh, right? Why can't it be in any other language? So, Omer Rabbohu, so Rabbohu said, Hochik Omer. The reason is as follows. It says, Shenema, the Posek says, V'onu, V'omru, right? In other words, V'onu, they are literally to respond, V'omru, and they are to say. Now, we've already had in previous chapters too, that where it says V'onu, V'omru, like for example in Bikurim, where it says V'oniso, V'omarta, right? So there we learned that in that case, it is B'lashon HaKodesh. Whereas if it only said V'omarta, or V'omru, or something like that, you know, without the idea of the onu, then in that case it could be in any language, whatever. This is something that we learned in some previous chapters as well. Okay? So because it says V'onu V'omru, right? Ula halon, and another passage in the Torah who Omer it says V'onu hal v'yim V'omru. This is in connection, if you remember, when we learned about the you know, that they put up the stones and they went up you know, Har Grizim, Har Ebal, and it says over there V'onu hal v'yim V'omru El kol ish Yisrael kol ram. They are to say to all the people of Israel called Rom, Orur, Orish, Hashem, and so on. That's when we learned, you know, that presumably they said first Baruch, and then they said Orur, and so on. Okay? So since over there it's definitely B'Lashon HaKodesh, because after all it says so in the Torah, so therefore we have to assume that over here too, since it says V'yonu V'yomru, that it's the same story. Ma niya ha'abura lahalon Lashon HaKodesh, just as in the other case we know that, you know, what they have to say has to be in the Lashon HaKodesh, so afkan bil Lashon HaKodesh, so likewise over here in the Lashon HaKodesh. Okay. V'seder egla rufo keitzad, and what is the order in which it says to proceed? So it says ki yimotze cholo ba'adoma. It's written, right, that if a slain person is found on the ground, the yotzu zakeinecha v'shoftecha, right? So then zakeinim and shoftim, right? So it means shloshim besdin hagodol shoshalayim ha'yotzim. Of course, why do they say that it has to be from the besdin hagodol v'yoshalayim? We'll see in a moment, because they feel that the idea of zakeinecha v'shoftecha implies that you have to have special judges, not simply, you know, run-of-the-mill judges. You can't take a local district judge, but you have to have somebody from the Supreme Court, so to speak. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Chamisha, then coming back to the Mishnah where it says, the Mishnah is Stam, right? In other words, without any authority quoted, it says how many go out? Three of them, right? But Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion that there should be five, right? So Tana Rabbanan. So sages taught as follows, okay? So again, it's a quotation from Sanhedrin in this place. In this case, it's V'yotzu Zekeinecha V'shoftecha. The Pasuk says that your elders and your judges are to go out. So he says, Zekeinecha Shnayim V'shoftecha Shnayim in Bezen Shokul Masud Lehen Od Echad. Right, since you cannot have an even number of judges, so therefore we have to add an additional judge, Harei Kan Chamisha. And whose opinion is this? It's the Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, it's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Now Rabbi Shimon Omer, all it says is Zekeinecha, your elders. That's Shnayim. That means two. V'yem Bezdin Shokol. And since we can't have an even number of judges, so therefore Masiv Nadim Od Echot Harekan. I'm reading in the wrong line. V'yem Bezdin Shokol. Right. So Masiv Nadim Od Echot Harekan Shlosha. Right. All right. So far we have a difference of opinion between whom? Between Rabbi Yehuda, who insists that there should be five. Right. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, only three. So now they say, look, Rabbi Shimon, Ami Hoksi Vishoftecha. Doesn't it say, Zikeinecha Vishoftecha? So why don't you add, you know, just as Rabbi Yehuda did, that each one means two plus two, right? And therefore five. So he says, no, the word Vishoftecha, he says, Ahumi Boy Lei, we need that. For those who are preeminent among your judges, in other words, as I said, members of the Beis Din Hagadol in Yerushalayim, of the Supreme Court. For Rabbi Yehuda, so, why doesn't he derive what? The fact that they should be special judges of the Sanhedrin from the word Vishoftecha? He used the word Vishoftecha instead, what? That it means another two, right? So he says, which means as follows. If it said Zekeinecha, and it does say that, so it would imply, but it could easily have said simply Ziknei. And if it said Ziknei, then we would know that, according to the opinion, you know, of Rabbi Yehuda, that implies also Miyuchodim She Biskeinecha, right? That they have to be special, in other words, that they should be members of the Sanhedrin. So, in other words, he derives from the fact that since it could have said Ziknei and it didn't, so therefore Zikeinecha implies two things. It implies that you need two judges more, and it also implies that they have to be Miyuchadim. This is how he interprets it. So, the Rab Shimon, so getting back to Rab Shimon, it said only three. So he says, Ikos Avrachmona Ziknei. If the Torah had written only the word Ziknei, so he says, Hava Amina, I could have said, Afilu Ziknei Hashuk, any old, any elders, whatever, that they could do the job, right? So therefore, because of Rachmona Zikeinecha, that's the reason why the Torah wrote the word Zikeinecha, which is, we learned, Rabbi Shimon interprets how, that they have to be Miyuchod, special, okay? The Yikos of Achmon is Zekeinecho, right? And if the Torah had written only Zekeinecho, this is what it means over here, then in that case, Hava Amina, I might have said that Afilu Sanhedrin Ketana, that they could be even members of a Sanhedrin Ketana, which, as we said, wouldn't necessarily imply judges, let's say, coming from the Beis Din Hagadol in Yerushalayim, right? But it could be, let's say, members of any Sanhedrin Ketana, including the local Sanhedrin Ketana. So, in that particular case, since, according to Rab Shimon, we want to have Miyuchadim, right? So, therefore, Kos Rachmono V'Shoftecho, that's why the Torah also wrote not just V'Yotzu Zekeinecho, but also V'Shoftecho, Yuchodin Shebishov Tefa, to imply that these have to be the special judges among your judges, in other words, members of the Supreme Court. No, Rabbi Yehuda Nam Gomar Ziknei Hoeda. Now, Rabbi Yehuda learned from a different situation. Remember what I said before about, Egezei Reshova, that where you have a similar situation, so say if this is true in situation A, it could also be true in situation B. So that therefore, we have another case where Ziknei Hoeda are mentioned, the elders of the community. That case happens to be in reference to the Korban Chatos. We have, different types of Chatos, okay? There is the Chatos which is brought by the ordinary person. If he committed a sin in error, and subsequently he recognized his error, and so he wants to do penance for it and to find kapara for it, so what does he do? So he brings a korban chatos. So actually he has to confess a sin and so on and so forth, and he brings a chatos. Okay. But we also have cases where a chatos is brought on behalf of either a kohen, godol, who has sinned, or a nosi, which would include also melech, who has sinned and then realizes errors, and finally even alcohol, if a congregation has sinned because they followed the wrong advice. You understand? So in that case, that is usually referred to as the par helim dover, okay? An ox which is for something, helim means that it was undiscovered until sometime afterwards they realized it, because it's written Ha'aleim Ya'alimu Einehem, and so on, you see. So that's why it is called the Par Helm Dover. Alright, so there again, if the congregation sins, then who has to bring the Chata? So the answer is, let the Ziknei Ho'eda, they are the ones who bring it on behalf of the entire community. Okay, so since over there Ziknei Ha'eda have to be Mala Halam Yuchodim Shabeda, that have to be the special people among the Eda, in other words, the elite, so to speak, of the Eda, right? So Afkan, so likewise, we apply the word Ziknei to imply what? Miyuchodim Shabeda, okay? The special people among this situation, in other words, the Miyuchodim of the Sanhedrin. Best of the Hagodol, right? Well, that it doesn't say specifically. Okay. But maybe it could apply. That's the question. That's up in the air at this moment, okay? Because right now we're interested more in what? And the problem about who are the people who have to take care of the ceremony of the Egla Rufa, you see, in this situation. So this is part of the question that they raise now. He says, Igomar, if that's the case, that you're learning a Gezeira Shova, so Ligmar al-Chulim Milsa Mihosam, right? So in that case, I might learn everything just from the question of the Par Helim Dover, where it's the Ziknei Hoeda. So what do I need even over here? The idea of Zikeinecho Veshoftecho, Lomoli. What do I need it for then? If I could have learned it from there, so why does the Torah have to repeat over here that it has to be Zikeinecho Veshoftecho? So, yeah, right. 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 Correct. But maybe we could argue backwards and say that since over here, you understand, when you have like equals, so an equation which is equals means that if A equals B, so then we have to come to the conclusion that maybe B equals A also. That's if it's an exact equation. Naturally, we know that it doesn't always work out that way. Okay. But you could argue backwards then in this case that if we have Zekeinecha Veshoftecha, then in that case it should also apply to the Zikne Ha'ed over there. We could say that. But the fact that the Torah insists upon having separate words and not simply rely upon Zikne Ha'ed over there, why does it say Zkenev Shoftecha Lovely? What do I need it for? So he says, Elo Vav Vishoftecha Leminyana, right? But rather he says that the Vav of Shoftecha is in order to add to the count. Now I have to tell you, it's not altogether clear. Why? Well, of course, then this would represent whose opinion? Obviously, it has to represent Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, right? Because that's what we're saying. Since it says Zekeinecha v'shoftecha, then it means not simply Zekeinecha who are Shoftecha, the way Rabbi Shimon interpreted, right? But rather, Zekeinecha v'shoftecha means that you have to have two for Zekeinecha and two for Shoftecha. And then, as we said, then we add one more so that we shouldn't have a best in shakel. Okay? So, this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Now, for Rabbi Shimon, how about him? Why didn't he say that since it says, Zekeinecha v'shoftecha, right? And the Vav should therefore be what? To say that you have to have 2 plus 2, and he didn't hold that, right? Why not? So the answer is, Vav le'mashmalei. He didn't have a tradition that the Vav in this particular case means that you have to add. Instead, his opinion or his tradition, whatever you want to say, in his particular case, it means that Zekeinecha has to be Shoftecha, and Shoftecha implies Miuchodim Shebeit. Okay. All right. So the Gemara now is going to continue on this theme about the Sanhedrin Gedola. Okay? Says, Michael Omar Rachmona Hamyuchanim Shoftecha. What is the Torah implying then that we need, you know, let's say members of the Sanhedrin Gedola, right? Because that's the way we understood it. So he said, Elo Miyato. All right. Let's take the following case. Miyotsu Shnayim, Umwadadu Shnayim. We really have to take a look at the Pasuk itself in the Torah to understand what they are raising, the question they're raising over here. Okay? Not enough that it says V'yotzu Zekeinecha V'shoftecha, but it also then says V'yotzu, and they are to go out, U'modadu, and they have to measure, etc., etc., right? So, in this case, the question is as follows. Okay? It says Elo Me'ato, that's the case. When the Torah then continues and says V'yotzu, right? Obviously it's V'yotzu, which is a plural, so it means 2. U'modadu, also Shnayim, right? Then in that case, L'Rabbi Yehuda, if I add 5 and another 2 who go out and another 2 who measure, then in that case, Harekan Tisha, that means we should have 9 members of the Sanhedrin go out and do the measuring, right? And not simply 5, the way he said to begin with. And the Rabbi Shimon, if we do the same thing, so Harei Kan Shiva, because he said 3, and if we say 2 more, and 2 more, in other words, the implication is that the verb means that 2 other people are going to do the work rather than the original. This is the what they're arguing, you understand?
Instructions were all for those original 3 or 5?
That's a good question. If it said simply, Umodadu Zekeinef Shotecha, just by that, there would be enough already, you know. But it doesn't say that, since it says V'yotzu, then it says a second time V'yotzu, and it says Umodadu, alright? So the first V'yotzu, so this is there in order to determine how much basically we have to have, right? Now, from this point on, V'yotzu U'modadu, the logical assumption is as what? That these 5 or these 3, who are they are, that what is their job? The job is to go out and to measure. But if we're arguing that each time that they have a plural, it means you have to have two. So this is what the question is. Is this what the implication is? That the Yotzu Maradu means two more and two more are to go to do it. So in that case, of course, as we said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to wind up with nine judges. And in the case of Rabbi Shimon, it would be seven judges. So obviously this is not what the meaning is, you see. But they like to theorize and say, doesn't the word indicate this, and doesn't this word indicate that, right? So, that being the case, we have to find out what does the Yotzu'u Umara do? In other words, you know, that second group of verbs, what do they refer to? If we say that they don't mean add more judges, okay? So he says, Hahume boy lay, we need it, Nechetetanya, as we learned in the Baraisa. Baraisa says, the Yotzu'u, and they are to go out. Who are the they? It's Hain, they, but Velosh Luchehen. That not to appoint others to go out and to act instead of them, right? Umoradu. And when it says, and they are to measure, it says, Sha'afila Nimso Ba'alila Ir. Even if we're found clearly close to the city, in other words, there's no question, you know, it's only 50 feet away or something like that, you understand? So, nevertheless, what? Hoyu modedin. They would measure, nevertheless, even though it was clear that there was no question as to what city they had to measure, right? But why should they measure then? Shemitzvah la'asok b'medita. Because it is a mitzvah for these people who are engaged in the whole business of the Egla Rufa that they must go and measure. So even if it's clear that they know exactly how close it is, but nevertheless they still have to go out and do the measuring because this is the mitzvah required of them. So now the Gemara continues and says, Masnisen, what we have learned over here is the Lo Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. It's not in accordance with an opinion held by Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So the question is, and what opinion is that? So I said the Tanya. As we have learned, that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer, he has a different interpretation. He says, Zikei Necho, this means the Sanhedrin. And he doesn't even state what number. Do you understand? In other words, what could the implication be? The entire Sanhedrin. That would be the implication. The entire Sanhedrin has to go out. Okay? So that's the Kenecha. Shoftecha. What does the Torah mean by Shoftecha? Kontram Eliezer ben Yaakov. So the answer is, the implication is, Zeh Melech V'Kohen Gadol. The king and the high priest also have to go out together with the Sanhedrin. How do we know that? Well, Melech Tichsiv, right? King, because we have a pasuk which says, Melech B'Mishpot Yamid Eretz, that a king causes a country, you know, to become firm, in other words, to become, outstanding, how? Through justice. In other words, a king is expected to be what? To be a shofet. He has to preside, you know, and see that mishpat, that justice is established in his land. Okay? So he's definitely covered by the idea of shoftecha. Okay? And how about the Kohen Gadol? How does he fit in? Kohen Gadol nechsiv, as the pasuk says, uvoso el hakohanim halviyim, right? And you have to come to the kohanim who are levim, v'yel hashofet, and unto the judge, asher yiyeh bayomim ahem, right? Who is in that time? So the question is, who is a shofet who is also kohanim levim? In other words, the answer is the Kohen Gadol. He is also to be considered as a shofet. So that therefore when it says Mishoftecha, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the implication is that also the king and the Kohen Gadol have to also participate in this process of the Eglah Arufa. So the following question was raised. It says, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he says, B'melech HaKohen Gadol hu defolig, Avov HaSanhedrin, Ika Rabbi Yehuda, Ika Rabbi Shimon, Sevir Alei. Are we to say that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov disagrees with what we have taught before, in that he requires what? He requires the king and the Kohen Gadol, because that wasn't mentioned by any of the other ones, but are we to say that in reference to the Sanhedrin, that either he's in agreement with Rabbi Yehuda or in agreement with Rabbi Shimon, in other words, five or three members of the Sanhedrin? You understand? In that area he does not. Is of the same opinion. Oh, Dilma, or perhaps the Sanhedrin Nami Polik, right? That he's also in disagreement with them, even as to the number of members of the Sanhedrin who have to go and participate in this. In other words, what? Adiiko Kulo Sanhedrin. In other words, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, as we're asking the question, maybe his implication is that he also requires the entire Sanhedrin Gedola to also go out and to participate in it. So not just the king and the Kohen Gadol, but also the entire Sanhedrin has to do it. So Omar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef said, Toshma, come and listen, he says. There is a teaching in the Gemara Sanhedrin which says as follows. It says, Mitzoan Zokin Mamre Abe Page. Okay, first of all, what is the Zokin Mamre? You remember, beginning of Parsha Shoftim, they speak about the fact, you know, that Hipponedo and Bilchor, Ben Dododon, and says for comfort, this I'm okay, that if you have problems and so on, then you have to do what? You have to go up to the place where the Sanhedrin is and resolve these weighty problems, right? And then it speaks about the fact, and what if there is somebody, a Zokin, who refuses to obey the edict of the Sanhedrin, but instead he comes out and he gives a completely contradictory opinion. Okay? So this is what is known as the Zokin Mamre, the one who disagrees completely with the decision of the Sanhedrin. And of course, according to the law, and you know, that we find over there, he's liable to the death penalty for disagreeing so severely. Now, of course, I don't say that it was ever actually carried out, but theoretically, it would be possible. But the question is, if a Zokin Mamre has a contradictory opinion, is the implication that if the Sanhedrin has a unanimous decision completely opposed to him, is that the case where he becomes a Zokin Mamre? Or should we say, and what if it's a split decision as far as the members of the Sanhedrin are concerned, and some vote one way and some vote others? Could we say then that the situation of a Zokin Mamre can take place? You understand what I'm asking? Can we have a situation of a Zokin Mamre when there are members within the Sanhedrin who agree with this point of view? So we have to say, no, it could only be possible when every member of the Sanhedrin is unanimous in the opinion that he is, provoking against, literally, that's what Mamre means over here. He's provoking against, okay? So, this is the question that
the prohibition?
Huh?
What's the prohibition?
That he refused to obey the decision of this kingdom. And, you know, in other words, there has to be a Supreme Court to adjudicate things, and they have to make a final decision. Once the final decision is made, you have to accept it. This is the idea. Why don't we get the Chumash? Verse 8 says over there, right, if there's something which is very, very difficult to decide, and it could be, you know, it could be any type of a case, bein don ladon, bein din, bein nekel nega, whatever it may be, or divrei rivos, then the kantor lisa, you go up to the place which God will choose, which of course is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. Notice the same thing, this is the reason why Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov said that this implies the Melech, the Kohen Gadol, right? And then they will ask questions, they will inquire, and they will tell you how the case should be decided, right? You have to do whatever they tell you if it is something which comes out of the Sanhedrin Gedolah. This is the idea. I'm interpreting as I'm going along, okay? And you shall observe to do in accordance with whatever they teach you. Whatever they tell you is the teaching of the Torah, and the judgment that they make, then this is what you shall do. You are not to depart from what they tell you, either to the right or to the left, right? Here we have that, we're talking about the Zaken Mamre. Okay, if a man acts presumptuously, he refuses to listen then to the Kohen Gadol, or in this case to the Son, or to the Sanhedrin, then he can be put to death, or the Ato HaRomikim Israel, so that you will remove evil from Israel. Because in other words, if he defies the teaching of the Sanhedrin, then it's only going to bring about evil in Israel, and therefore this is a preventative to make sure that it doesn't happen. And the Cholom Yishmu Yiroh, all people should hear and they should fear, and lawyers do not act presumptuously. So that this is what we're talking about, the case of the Zaken Mamre. Okay, now as I said before, theoretically then we can have, you know, a case of a judge who refuses to accept the opinion. And again, I stress, it has to be the unanimous opinion of the Sanhedrin. It could not be where you have a majority and a minority, because obviously the minority might be in agreement with him. So then he's not a Zaken Mamre. He has somebody who can represent this point of view.
Once the decision is made, you have a majority.
Right, and in that case it becomes like a unanimous opinion, right? You're correct about that.
A large minority,
right,
agrees with him. They are going to have to go according to the decision.
This is correct, and therefore he's expected to fall in line, right? You're absolutely right, absolutely right. And he too has to fall in line, yeah. But whether he would be liable to the death penalty is already a different story, you see. Then he would not be, because there is an opinion. But again, as I say, it has to be unanimous opinion, which he defies, in this particular case, after the opinion has been, judged and proclaimed that this is the law. Okay. All right. So getting back to our Gemara right now. Okay. Remember, the question is about Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because he insists that what? His insistence is apparently that the entire Sanhedrin has to be involved, as well as the Kohen Gadol and the Melech, right? So Amar Rav Yosef Toshma says, Mitzon Zaken Mamre Abe Pagim. Let's say that they discovered, or that they found, that the Zaken Mamre, where did he meet the Sanhedrin that he defied them? It was in Bei Page. In English, it's B-E-T-H-P-A-G-E, Page. Okay? question is, where is Beis Pagit? The answer is in some place, not where, according to one opinion, it's still within the area of Yerushalayim, but not within the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. It's outside the Beis HaMikdash someplace, okay? Now, if that's the case, let's say that he found the Sanhedrin over there at Beis Pagit, the Himra Alehen, and, you know, he defied them, right? So, Yochel Teheyam Rosh HaMroah, then are we to say that his defying them is punishable, you know, with this death penalty as being a Zokin Mamre? So Talmud Lomar, so that's why the Torah stresses something else. What does it say? It says, V'kamtum yoliso el hamakom, that you have to go up to the place, and of course, what is the place? The place of the Sanhedrin is where? It's in the Lishkat HaGozis, as we said. So only if he defies them in the Lishkat HaGozis would he be considered a Zokin Mamre, but not if the Sanhedrin was not in the Lishkat HaGozis. Okay, so this is what he's saying so far. So, Melamed, it says, the fact that it says, Amokim, Melamed Shamokim going, right? It teaches us, therefore, that the place where the Sanhedrin is an important factor to determine, you know, whether he is to be considered a Zokin Mamre or not. Okay? So now they ask another question. The Norfolk Kamo, how many members of the Sanhedrin went out? He said that he found them where? In Beit Hage, right? So in other words, they were not in the temple itself. They were not in the Lishkat HaGozis. So how many were out? So it says, Elaim or the Norfolk Mitzoson. If we say that only some of them went out, then Dilma, perhaps, Hanach Deika Gavai, those that are still within the Lishkat HaGozis, Kavosis Vilav, maybe they're of the same opinion that he is. So in that case, it certainly is not a Zokin Mamre. Elipshita, but rather, we have to understand what? The Norfolk Kulhu, that all the members of the Sanhedrin left the Lishkat HaGozis. Okay? And that's when he found them where? In Beit Pagit. Okay? So the question is, Ulamai, so why did they all leave the Lishkat HaGozis and go out? Iladvar HaRishus, if we say that it's only for something, you know, that if they feel like it, they could do it, but if they don't feel like it, they don't, right? Something which is voluntary. Ni Matsunafke, are they then permitted to leave the Lishkat HaGozis? The Hoksiv, didn't we learn that suppose in Shir Hashem which says Shorereich Agan HaTzohar Al Yechsa HaMozek, literally your navel is like you know, a Agan is like a bowl, a moon shaped bowl, literally Agan HaTzohar Al Yechsa HaMozek, and there is no wine missing from it. And how is it interpreted? Interpreted as meaning that the Sanhedrin, right, sits around in a circle. As a matter of fact, the Torah in the Sanhedrin it speaks over there, it's like Kechatzi Gola Egoin Agula, like in a semicircle they sit over there, right? And it also implies that you have always a full number of the Sanhedrin. So the question is, why then should somebody go out? Well, take a look, let's say somebody does have to go out. Shim nitzvach echod mehem lotzeis, right? If, let's say, one of the members of the Sanhedrin has to go out, so im yeshom es mishloisha, if there are still 23 members in the Sanhedrin gedola left, keneged Sanhedrin katana, corresponding to the number of judges that you need in the minor Sanhedrin, right? Then Yotze, then in that case he can go out. The Yim Lav, but if there aren't 23 who are there, then Enu Yotze is not allowed to go out. So, if that's the case, we say it can't be that he went out for something voluntary. Had to eat lunch or something like that, you understand? So, Elo Pshito, but rather we have to say that why did the members of the Sanhedrin go out? The Dvar Mitzvah. They went out because they were required to go out for the performance of a mitzvah. So the question is, Lemai, what mitzvah were they involved in? Lavim Dinas Eglot. Wouldn't it be that they went out in order to measure where was the slain person so that they could bring the Egla Arufa? So that would be in accordance then with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, which says that we have to have the entire Sanhedrin involved, right? For Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and then this would be the reasoning of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So Amar Lei Abaye, so Abaye said no, says lo. He says, Dilma, it's possible that they went out for a different reason, not in reference to the Egla Rufa, but rather the entire Sanhedrin went out for a different purpose. Namely what? For example, the Hosif al Hoir the Al Ha'azoros, that if they wanted to add to the boundaries of Yerushalayim, or to the boundaries of the Beis HaMikdash, in other words, to enlarge it, then in that case, it had to be measured, right? And who measured it? The answer is the members of the Sanhedrin Gedolah. Kiditan, as we have learned, it says, Ein Mosifin al Hoyev al Azoros, right? We're not allowed to add to the city, to the boundaries of the city, or to the boundaries of the Beis HaMikdash, courtyards literally, Ela Bevezdin Shoshim Miyechot, except if we have the Bezdin of 71 judges. Naturally, which is the Bezdin of 71 judges? That's the Sanhedrin Gedolah. Okay? So maybe that's the reason why they went out. And then it says, Tanya Kavose de Rav Yosef, and we learned another teaching which corresponds to what Rav Yosef just said. Namely, Mitzoyen Abes Page, let's say that, you know, he found them in Bet Page, right? The Himra Lehen, and then he went, you know, to and he disagreed with the opinion of the Sanhedrin. And why did they go out? To go and Sheyotzim Dinas Egla, possibly in order to measure, you know, the slain person, so that we would know who has to bring the Egla Rufa. Oh, La Hosef Olahoyir V'Alazos, or for the purpose of adding to the city or to the courtyards, right? Yochol Tehei Hamro Seh Hamro, can we say then that if he defied their opinion, is he punishable as a Zokin Mamre? Talmud Lomar, that's why the Torah says, V'kamta V'Yolisa, El Hamokom is the rest of the Pasuk, you have to arise and go up to the place, Melamish Hamokom Goim, teaches us that the place where the Sanhedrin meets is a factor that we have to consider. If they're not in the Lishkas HaGozis, then in that particular case, we do not punish him as a Zokein Mamre. Okay, we shall stop at this particular point.